It's another Saturday morning on CCO when we talk cars. More likely problems with your car, your truck, your van. If you need to bring in your vehicle for some service, but you want to know ahead of the game what could be wrong, why don't you get some free advice from ASC certified technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Denny.
How are you? How was your week at Lloyd's? Probably busy is my guess.
Well, the summer keeps holding on, so yeah, we're still pretty busy, and I anticipate a continuing, especially as the seasons do eventually change.
Still some AC work there, I presume, with 80s?
There were a couple in this past week, and it's hard, you know. You can keep in mind with the air conditioning, obviously keeps the vehicle and keeps us cool in the summer months. But in the winter months, it helps remove the moisture when you're running the defrost, so as your windshield might ice up or freeze up or fog up, that air conditioning compressor dries the moisture out of the air, so it keeps your windshield clear. So it does have a purpose in the winter months also.
I was thinking, speaking of keeping windshields clear, we always get questions about, every time I clean the interior of my windows, especially the dash, the windshield, it like fogs up again. What's the deal? What do you guys, is there a, I know 3M makes a product, but what do you guys, your people do to clean windshields, the interior of windows?
You know, that's a really touchy subject because getting all those spots and things clean, we have, and I can't, it slips my mind now, but we have a really nice heavy-duty glass cleaner that seemed to do a pretty good job, but you could spend a lot of time trying to get every nook and corner and cranny clean and clear of any smudges. So it just takes patience and a clean towel.
I've been doing a lot of window cleaning this week around the house, and I've seen it online, and I've tried it and will again later today. It's like one water, white vinegar, and a couple of drops of Dawn soap, and it's amazing. And plus a good microfiber towel. That really does the job. So I may try that on my vehicle today a little bit later. If you have any kind of problems with your car, your truck, your van, don't wait to call or text Nick right now, because Nick takes his leave about 7:45 or so. Our time goes by so quickly. So call us or text us any kind of a car problem you may have. 651-461-9226. Nick, I was reading an article from a guy, I can't remember what he does. He writes, he's like an auto journalist for keeping cars running, kind of a maintenance guy. And he was talking about answering a question about, I know it's a little early in the season, but how long, and we'll get questions, how long do I warm up my car in the winter? He claims that because of the newer cars, not the old carburation cars, the new vehicles, you don't need that time. Just turn it on. As long as it takes you to buckle your seatbelt, you're good to go. And I thought, I don't think this guy's ever lived in a Minnesota weather with 15 below. What would you say is a rule of thumb? We're talking the winter time now.
You know, in the dead of winter, I don't completely disagree with him. I think a few moments to allow some of those fluids to start circulating and kind of get a little, you know, when it's really the dead of winter and you start the vehicle, it tells you. You can hear it creaking and squeaking and making some noises that we don't typically hear. So I do think after a few moments, once all the fluids have started to work their way around and starting to move more freely, it really comes down to our comfort. Now, you know, once again, if you're clearing the windshield, if you're scraping, as you're doing things, that gives the vehicle more time to warm up. As soon as it's up to running temp, then we'll have heat. So you don't need to run the vehicle fully heated so we have heat for the car to be happy. It's more of our comfort. So there's a balance there. You know, it's wasteful to let the car sit there and idle. You cannot and should not let a car idle unattended, because somebody could hop in and drive away, obviously. Yeah. But as far as the car goes, the car's probably okay after a few minutes or a few moments.
Yeah. A good balance there. Yeah, I agree. Let's grab some phone calls this morning. I think Phyllis is first up. You're calling from Star Prairie, Wisconsin. Good morning, Phyllis. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I had asked a question about this previously, and I'm trying to get a follow-up. I have a 2021 Toyota Hybrid, where the brake, when you pressed on it, it would suddenly slip forward and you had a complete braking. So I took it into my dealer And after a good deal of conversation, they finally did a software update and said that should fix it. And it did for a while. It started to do it again. And I went back to them and brought it back. I said, it's repeating. They said, this is very common in a hybrid. If you talk to a Prius owner as they get older, it happens more and more where it's transitioning from the gas to the electrical, and it's deciding which brake system to use. Have you ever heard of anything like this? As the car gets older, it just gets worse.
You know, I'm not sure that the braking system should stay consistent, in my opinion, through the life of the vehicle. So if you're noticing something that's definitely affecting the quality of braking, you know, there can be a sensation that we might not be completely comfortable with if the system's working properly and you can stop on a dime and you can do all those things you always have. That's one thing. But if you're noticing that there's a change where maybe it's just not quite grabbing like it should, I don't think that's acceptable. Maybe, you know, and I don't know the exact ins and outs of the software and what exactly they're changing there. So it's fair to say maybe try a different dealership or inquire maybe with Toyota themselves, you know, work your way up the food chain a little bit just to get maybe a more conclusive answer other than the fact that that happens as it gets older. Because that doesn't really make sense to me, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Good luck, fellas. Let us know what happens if you get a good answer. Before we break, I want to grab another phone call from Randy calling in this morning from Hastings, I believe. Randy, good morning. Thanks for waiting. What is your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got a question on 87 octane and 88 octane. You know, granted, 88 is 5 to 10 to 15 cents cheaper, but I get such... I get 2 to 3 to 4 miles a gallon less with 88. Does it hurt the vehicles? Is it worth the, or is it just personal preference? It's hard to determine if it's worth the cost or the cost savings.
Well, that's where the math comes into play. And as you said, it's less expensive, but you get less fuel economy. So it's kind of a trade-off, you know. The difference is the alcohol content. So the higher the alcohol, obviously it burns. It's got more ethanol in it. But because of that, it burns a little bit faster, so your fuel economy drops. You know, you'll notice, like, there's a whole variety of fuels out there with varying alcohol content. And the first and most important thing is read your owner's manual, see what your car is designed to be running on. If it asks for a certain octane range, you really need to stick within that. You can't use that E85 or the really high alcohol stuff if your car is not designed to do that, because there's a different components in the fuel system that allows for that. But to your question, you do the math. You know, you can run through a few tanks of both. Check your mileage, check the range. You know, one thing is if it's getting lesser fuel economy, that means you're at the fueling station more often. Maybe you're saving a little bit of money, but if you're there more often, what is your time worth? So it's an equation that's best fit for each individual driving style, and depends on how much time and what kind of money you're trying to save.
Very good. Again, like you were suggesting, read the manual. Find out what the manufacturer recommends. We need to take a quick break, but don't wait. Any kind of a car care question, get it us to it sooner rather than later. 651-461-9226 here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Had a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our car care show here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break. Nick Stoffel, who runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, answering those questions at 651-461-9226. He'll be with us, Nick, will till just about 7:45 this morning. So don't wait. Let's hear from you. And, Nick, I'm thinking for those folks that maybe actually need to bring in their vehicle for some service and they want to get in touch with you guys, tell us how we do that.
Absolutely. If you do need some advice or have a question before you make an appointment with your local shop or dealership, don't hesitate to call. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And the forecast this upcoming week looks good. So if you're out on Grand Avenue going for lunch or a stroll, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand. That's on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And finally, please check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good. We'll get you that info before Nick leaves us this morning. Looking at some text questions this morning, Nick. Here's one. It says it's a 2014 Ford F-150, 210,000 miles on it. Question is, do I need to check the transmission fluid level? That dipstick is in an awkward place.
It should be checked. You know, it's you don't know until you see. Now, some systems or some vehicles have electronic ways of measuring, and that's fine too. But if you have a dipstick and you're capable and willing to follow the procedure, it might need to be warmed up, because the fluid level will adjust with temperature, and you can get in there and have it checked, or the next time you're in for service, have them check it, even better.
Yeah, I remember years ago that, I can't remember what car, maybe my brother's old Chevy. It seemed to me you could actually have a dipstick to check it, but you always had to have the engine running. You're too young to remember that, I'm sure. So we won't go there. Never mind.
No comment.
Good. Diplomacy. I'm wondering, Texter says, and this is a question we'll get from time to time as we head toward winter. I'm wondering what needs to be done to your car before storing it away for the winter.
That is a common question that we start to see as the seasons change. And there's a lot of opinions. If it's in a controlled environment, climate-wise, you probably don't have to do a whole lot, to be honest. Maybe a battery tender wouldn't hurt. If it's going to be out in the elements where it's going to see the swings of temperature and it gets very cold, if you're able to remove the battery, bring it into a warmer place, the battery wouldn't mind that. You put in a trickle charger on the battery if it's in that storage or that garage is always a nice thing. I like to have it full of fuel. You can add like a stable to the fuel and kind of run that through to kind of help it work in the springtime. Just a good once over. You know, there's a matter of opinion. Do you change the oil before you put it away, or do you change the oil and you take it out? And that's a preference thing. You know, there's a lot of preferences. But if you can kind of go consistent, the car has a good once over, it's probably the best thing you can do.
I was wondering too about, and we talk about it from time to time, tire inflation when you store a vehicle. What do you think about that?
That's another one of those preferences. Some folks might say you can go a couple pounds higher, and that's okay because, if the tire were to lose any air over the winter, come springtime, you don't want to deal with a flat tire. So I wouldn't do very much so. Just a couple PSI, look in the door placard, see what it says. Maybe go just 2 or 3, maybe 4 pounds of pressure, depending where it's at. But don't go high. Don't look at the, on the tire, it'll show like a max pressure. Don't do that. That's too much for sure. But if you want to go a few PSI over while you store it for the winter months, that's probably fine.
When I was talking about the old days, I was referring to a transmission dipstick, not oil. I'm corrected. Good morning, Texter says, I truly enjoy the show. I have learned so much as a 65-year-old woman who knows nothing about cars. My question is, I have a 2023 Tahoe, and if I can use the e-gas in it, is that a lower price? Kind of goes back to that earlier call, right?
It does, and it depends if your vehicle is designed. If you have that, if it's a Chevrolet of the yellow gas cap, it's it can use that ethanol fuel, but it does change the fuel economy. So you might be thinking, hey, I'm saving myself $10 or $20 or whatever it may be on fuel, but you'll be back at the pump more often. So you have to kind of see what fits you best, see what fits your budget and your schedule. I want to get as much fuel in my truck as possible and go as least often. So it's probably not the best path for me, but for somebody else, it might be convenient. It might work out better. So just kind of, if you're curious, like I said, if your vehicle is equipped to handle that ethanol fuel, try both ways. Run the tank with the regular stuff or two tanks, and then run the other route and measure your fuel economy and see what the savings and money is, and see what the difference in your range and how many miles you get out of a tank, and make the best decision for you.
Good idea. All right, let's take a quick break, see what that forecast is, the weather coming up here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of CCO's Car Care Show here every Saturday in the 7 o'clock hour. Welcoming your texts and calls for Nick Stoffel, ASE Certified Tech at Lloyd's Automotive. Nick, we have a few minutes to go and some text messages to help folks out. Here's one, 2011 Camry. Is it possible, Texter says, that the front struts are still good, but the springs in the struts are bad? My car bottoms out where it never used to. No signs of leakage. Thanks. Love the show. What do you think, Nick?
Well, typically, if a spring has gone bad, it'll break. And so when you're in for service, when they have it in the air, they can kind of inspect the coil spring as it kind of works its way around the strut there. And oftentimes, we might find that one of the ends has snapped off, so it's not exactly fitting like it should. And if that's the case, they definitely need to be replaced. If you're doing the coil springs, you're going to do the struts with them because they're kind of encapsulated with them. So you have to remove the whole assembly. And that would not make sense to take a new coil spring and a 13-year-old strut and put it back into the vehicle. So have it looked at. If, in fact, they are broken, you would do them as a complete assembly.
Okay. This texter sent this in, a 2018 Sorento, 110,000 miles on it. The shop suggested transmission fluid flush. Is that correct, do you think?
As always, we like to talk about that manual. There's a service interval for that. If you're within the time or mileage, absolutely, that transmission fluid should be serviced. You might learn as vehicles get newer. You know, you go way back, we used to take the pan down, we'd replace the filter and put new fluid in. That kind of evolved into a flush, which some vehicles still have done, but it seems to be more common now that we do a drain and fill, where there's a drain plug and a fill plug, so we drain the fluid out, you know, figure out what the capacity of the fluid amount is, and then refill it with that same amount of fluid, and that's kind of how services have evolved with transmissions.
Nick, a listener is asking about, do they still use the quarter test for tires? What is that about?
Well, it used to be, I think it was a penny test, actually, where you'd put, and if you had Lincoln's head, you could, depending on how much you could see, would tell you if your tires are down to the replaceable measurement. There's also a little rubber wear bar, which is kind of at that 330 seconds, which, to be completely honest, I think 330 seconds is definitely not enough in the winter months, so... You know, we've been talking a lot at the shop here recently. Like last winter, we didn't do a lot of tires, mostly because we didn't have a lot of snow. So people didn't have that experience where the car was slipping and sliding, where they got nervous and they came in. So keep in mind, as likely we're going to have snow this winter, as we go in the next month or two, we might, some of that white stuff might fall out of the sky. Have your tires looked at now so you're not into this big rush trying to get tires when all of a sudden it's too late and then you can't, and you're stuck on the side of the road.
So probably because of inflation, we've gone from a penny to a quarter. Is that what you're saying?
Fair enough.
Okay. This listener says, I turn on the heater in my 2002 Buick LeSabre. No heat. Where do I start to fix the problem?
Well, for having no heat in the sense that the fan is not working, that is one thing. There's a blower motor. There's some different controls on the dash that will decide where that air is blowing, whether it's the floor, the vent, or the defrost. That could be the fan itself, it could be a resistor that controls the fan, or maybe the switch. If you're saying there's no heat because it's blowing, it's not warm air, well, that's a different issue that we might have possibly with the thermostat, the cooling system, or once again with that heater box, there's also a control system that allows the air past the heater core to heat it, as it does with the evaporator to cool it for their conditioning. So if your issue is no fan, we go down one path. If your issue is that the air that we're getting is not warm or not hot, that's a different path that we'd be taking.
Okay. Listeners, text Nick has a kind of a different slant on a lot of our questions we get about oil changes. He or she says, what do you think about 20,000-mile oil changes? Sounds like it would save money and millions of gallons of oil. What do you think?
Well, my opinion is... that's too long, as you probably could guess. And the reason why I say this is just based on our experience, we see lots of mechanical issues with engines, which are very costly, a lot of them related to lack of oil maintenance. You know, the oil doesn't just, you know, splash around in the engine. It uses oil flow and oil pressure to control some of the timing systems within these engines. So if those items are not working properly, our engine may not run, it may not run well, our fuel economy might not be what it should be, which obviously can affect the amount of fuel that we use. So, you know, I can't stress enough to follow the owner's manual. Our rule of thumb on synthetic oil is 5,000 miles. On the conventional semi-synthetic stuff, it's 3,000 miles, and that's just based on, you know, I've been at Lloyd since 1998, so I've been doing this a long time, and based on my experience, that's what we recommend.
Finally, a listener, since we were talking about the gasoline and octanes, things like that, are there differences from station to station in the quality of gasoline that you buy?
You know, my best advice is I try to get fuel from a place that seems to be pretty busy. So, you know, they're getting that tank replenished and they're getting a fresh load of fuel often. You know, I can't speak particular brand one to another. I like a branded place also, you know, kind of like with oil. You know, I know there's a lot, not not saying something else is not good or it's bad, just based on my experience, I like to try to use the branded products because I feel like there's a little more, maybe a little more integrity there and you can have a little more quality control.
All right, that makes sense. Nick, we're just about out of time for the folks, again, that might need your services at Lloyd's. How do we find you again?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a question, give us a call, 651-228-1316. And if you're in St. Paul on Grand Avenue, we're at 982 Grand. That's two blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And then finally, just check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
I'm going to do that very thing, and I might even see you next week with, of course, always goodies in my hand. So, all right, Nick, thanks. Have a good week, and we'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
And Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. Now, Ted Farrell's next up from Haskell's with his wine chat. And keep in mind, in the 8 o'clock hour, we have a show called Smart Garden. A lot of lawn and garden talk. Mary Meyer from the U of M will be answering all of those questions for you here on News Talk 830 WCCO.